the hell is this? The hell is this? Now what?
Kane, I promised you that before this night was over, your life would never be the same. You said this is the happiest you've ever been in your life, huh? Well, unfortunately, some people always can't be that happy. Let me ask you a question, Kane. How happy is Katie Vick? Yeah, that's right. I know, Kane. I know it all. 10 years ago, you killed her. That's right, Kane. You are a murderer.
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, and today we are going to be going 10 years back into the past, but my question I ask every week, how are you doing today, Wei?
Pretty well.
I am overwhelmed with work right now.
Yeah.
I had to just quickly look at my notes and remember, oh, yes, right, Raw episode, I watched this yesterday. This is what we are going to talk about. Mm-hmm. There's too much going on, Wei. There's just too much going on. And on top of that, our workplace, it's got this weird Wi-Fi situation where I have secretly commandeered this voiceover booth where the internet is fantastic.
Hmm.
But everywhere else in this entire office, I find the Wi-Fi is horrendous.
Yeah.
And you were a victim of this.
And today you were kicked out of your booth.
They had to do, this is the voiceover booth, so they voice all of their, all of our shows are done out of here. So when that happens, I'm fucked. I get sent out to another office where the internet is, you can't even work. I can't even do it. And I had to stay here at work today because a guest was coming in to do an interview.
So, could you imagine if the world's internet went down for a day?
It'd be brutal. It'd be terrible.
It'd be like no
water. I don't know how regular newsrooms did it before the internet. You had to call people. Talk to people.
A pencil. Paper.
Imagine that. You'd be cutting film all day.
I would be splicing together edits.
Yeah, putting together
reel to reel.
Jimmy Corderas and myself talking TNA Destination X.
I can't imagine it.
Wow. It's just unbelievable. What a, even in 2002, Wei, it was a different world back on October the 7th. Segway.
A completely different world. I was still in high school.
So was I.
Enjoying professional wrestling.
I kind of look back at this time and I think to myself, I'm so ingrained now that it's so weird if I watch like an NXT or a SmackDown and I'm not taking notes. It feels weird. Feels like, what's the point? Why am I'm not watching this for entertainment. I'm just watching it and I'm not even taking notes and I'm not going to do a podcast on it. What's the point?
Oh, well, it's supposed to be for your entertainment.
It's not.
Sometimes it is.
And I remember back to this. This was how all of us watched wrestling, and probably the majority of our listeners watch wrestling just watching it.
Totally. At this time, when I watched it, I was just watching it as a fan. And for whatever reason, I watched every week, and I really enjoyed it. I'm trying to think how I was able to do that.
This specific time period you
this
enjoyed?
This specific time period. I mean, I wouldn't say I necessarily enjoyed every single episode, but I would say the height... around the height of my fandom was around this period, 2001, 2002.
2002, I think, is a kind of underrated year within the WWE because it was like the boom period is far over and removed from the invasion, had come and gone and fizzled. And now we were into, well, what's next? Mm. And it was this weird time period where the roster was still stacked. I mean, it was... tons of stars, lots of great talent, especially SmackDown. This was the fall of 2002 when SmackDown was just red hot. I was not a big fan of Raw at this time, specifically in the fall of 2002 where they were just trying so much stuff as we will get into later on in this show. But it was like you had a lot of great workers, but SmackDown was like the wrestling fans' wrestling show.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, because this obviously was just months after the draft, when Jericho was initially on SmackDown, and then they moved him to Raw, and he did some interview, and they asked him, well, what's it like being on Raw now instead of SmackDown? And he said something like, it's like I was on the Stanley Cup champion Detroit Red Wings, and now I've been sent to the Nashville Predators.
Mm.
Like, Raw, to me, was not the show I looked forward to every week at this particular time period. It was the reign of Triple H, his dominant run on top, and SmackDown was just it's when Heyman was booking it, and it was just two really contrasting products at the time, which is what I really enjoyed about the brand split, when they did feel different, and if forever for whatever reason someone would show up on another show, it was really not a big deal, but it was something people popped for, because it was in a different scenario or a different environment.
It really changed up the dynamics of the scene at the time. So, yes, you had Jericho switch over to Raw, but then you had Benoit go over to SmackDown, and that completely changed things on that side. SmackDown, I think, thinking back to my favorite period of the past decade, I would rank that period on SmackDown as perhaps my favorite, with the SmackDown 6, of course, and you had Brock Lesnar on that show. On Raw, on the other hand, we had
hot lesbian action.
Hot lesbian action. And what else? What else did we have that was specifically featured on this particular episode?
Well, I think we should build up to what
we'll build
was
up
featured.
To it. Okay.
The legacy of this show.
Originally, we were set to do the 500th episode of Raw, of
That's
course,
true.
In preparation for the 1,000th edition. But we could not find that. And in all my research, I for the life of me, do not remember anything from this 500th episode of
no,
Raw.
Neither do I.
I don't know if they even celebrated it or made a big deal out of it at all. But, you know.
You know what? I bet they didn't, because it was, what, December 2002, right?
Something like that.
Because they did the Raw 10th anniversary show, like, the next month.
Oh.
It was January of 2003. You know what? I actually remember this story. I remember reading it in The Observer that they were originally going to celebrate the 500th episode, but at the same time, it was something like, I want to say Monday Night Football was doing their 500th episode, so they decided instead of doing the same gimmick, they'd celebrate their 10th anniversary instead of their 500th episode. I'm pretty sure that – I think originally they were going to make the 500th episode big. So, yeah, it was just any other show.
That makes sense. It makes total sense.
And it's a reason why it's impossible to find online. Yeah. I'll try and find things, and if I can't find them, I'm like, wait, we'll find it. When you can't find it, it's very tough to find.
In our 2.5 years of doing reviews for this podcast, we really only had one or two instances of not being able to find something. I mean, usually, like, what, I like to hurt people. We were even able to track down a copy of that.
You had to drive somewhere to find that.
Yes, but at least we found it. But this 500th... I keep saying 500th.
Yeah, I was going to say, you must hate saying that. Episode 500.
Episode 500 of Raw. It's impossible. And good luck to those of you who
are. Well, we actually did have a listener who afterwards did find us a link, but I had already started on this new Raw, and I'm like, I did not just waste a half hour starting this show.
And I think by all accounts,
this was way better.
This was much better.
Why did you pick this one? Because you said, well, let's just review this instead. Well, did you have any idea what was on this?
I didn't know what you thought was so special about it was going to be on it, but I knew it would be Raw Roulette, and it was an episode that I remember pretty fondly.
Okay.
It also featured TLC 4. So, you know, of all the episodes of that year on Raw, I would say this is one of the more notable ones.
Yeah, this was kind of like your hot shot episode of Raw. Mm-hmm. It was, let's do a whole night designed for a rating. And that's what tonight's show was, from Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Thomas and Mack Center. And as Wei mentioned, it was Raw Roulette with then general manager Eric Bischoff running the show. And they had this cheesy Vegas open to the show with old-style Vegas music, which would be the theme music throughout the night. And Eric Bischoff opens up the show in front of the wheel, the Raw Roulette wheel. And he's in the back with a bunch of dancers. And some of the matches include an HLA match. And he spins it, saying that this wheel represents everything Vegas represents: sex, sin, lust, and danger. And the first stipulation match would be a steel cage match to start the show. And then we go into the opening, the Union Underground theme music for Raw.
I like that song.
Yeah, it was good.
I like that opening. I like this, you know, the graphics. I like the whole thing. I think it's a very fitting for, obviously, for Eric Bischoff to be the one to introduce this concept. It's very much inspired by Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal from Halloween Havoc and WCW, and the Vegas tie-in is there as well. So I enjoy the concept. I mean, say what you will about having too many gimmicks on a show, but at least for this episode, I felt like they did a very good job. I've always wondered, how do they make the wheel land on a specific spot during their live takes?
I always thought it was either
like a magnet or something.
Yeah, maybe a magnet or
somebody down.
It could have been a pre-tape.
Still, I'm sure they're able to get it.
I always assume because they did a close-up shot at the top that you just have someone below hold it at a certain place. You get the.
That's still very difficult.
Not really. When you think about this, and listen, I'm not a physics major, but if it's a wheel and it's all like, you know, pie slices, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
If your cage match is on one, you would get the opposite, and you're just holding it at a certain direction, and then obviously it's going to stop on the opposite one above.
You mean you would slow it down to make sure that you hit the opposite one down below.
You would have to position your arm in such a way, like if steel cage was direct opposite HLA match.
Mm-hmm.
When you tighten the shot, you would grab HLA match, and you'd know that you have to stop it at a certain point so that it lands where the black marker is.
How are you able to grab it when it's spinning?
Hand-eye coordination. I don't know, Wei. I don't know. I don't know the secrets, and maybe we shouldn't know
Somebody
the secrets.
Somebody would know. It's a magician's craft, isn't it?
Maybe we'll have an answer on next week's show.
Okay.
Was that a tease, Pollock? Yes, that was a tease for something that I haven't even told Wei about yet.
Oh, wow.
Oh, surprises. Okay. Building that quarter hour. Announcers are Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. And we got shots from the world in New York. Remember that, Wei? The restaurant. The restaurant we never went to.
You've been, haven't you?
I have not gone.
Somebody I know has been.
Someone once messaged us saying they stole a menu from WWF New York.
Yes.
Which was later named The World during the name change. So we kick things off with a steel cage match between Booker T and Big Show. Should we keep a count of who's still around today in today's WWE? Because we've got Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, Booker T, and Big Show.
Are we just counting WWE or TNA?
We'll say WWE.
Okay.
Because Bischoff,
you could find just as many TNA people in this.
10 years, folks. 10 years.
10 years. And you know what? What was noticeable for me, part of the reason why I wanted to do episode 500 was just so I could see the difference between the first episode and the 500th. Episode, and then 500 and 1,000. And what I noticed was that
miles of difference between 1 and 500 and inches of difference between...
Almost none. Aside from going to HD, everything looks the same.
Other than the content and the tone of the show, in which I found the 2002 Raw... I found it jarring because I watched this back-to-back with this past Monday's edition of Raw, and it was just like, man, we have... a completely different tone versus here I'm watching a paddle on a pole match.
I wouldn't say completely different.
No.
What we watched today is much more toned down, but in terms of, I don't know,
the
content,
look and the aesthetics. Yeah, you're right.
And even the format of the show to, you know, really the evolution of the show really came in the late 90s during the Attitude Era. And really after that, for the past, 12 years afterwards, it's really been stagnant.
Booker T and Big Show kick things off. This was right before Big Show was moved over to SmackDown and given that big push under Paul Heyman. And Show hits a side slam, bunch of big clotheslines, misses a splash in the corner. Show tosses Booker into the cage upside down, then does it again. There was a fan heckling here at ringside, though. It was clearly audible on TV, yelling, "Big Slow! Hey, Big Slow!" And it was hilarious, I found. Booker was just selling for the entire match. I thought it was very boring. Show eventually spits on Booker and goes for the door, but Booker gets to his feet and fights back, hits a Harlem sidekick, sending Show into the cage, then a scissors kick, and then hits a scissors kick to Show off of the top rope. And as Booker goes to climb, Show catches him, teases a chokeslam, but takes a low blow from Booker and falls off the top rope. And this allows Booker to climb over and win. 8 minutes and 7 seconds. And... then in the post-match, Booker went for a spin-a-rooney on the floor, but Chris Jericho attacks him from behind, tosses him into the cage, busts open Booker T, above his eye, and Jericho just continually yells, "Who's the sucker? Who's the sucker? I'm no sucker."
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does. I thought this match was pretty boring, as you said, but the finish I thought was very good, and I thought the crowd made this match that much better. From the get-go, this was an incredibly hot crowd in Las Vegas.
Yes, it really was, and Las Vegas is not always a typically hot crowd for wrestling. Bischoff is at the wheel, and he's talking to Kane and the Hurricane, who were tag champions at the time, and Kane was also the IC champion. And they were giving him the big push here because he would be challenging Triple H at No Mercy, the next pay-per-view they had coming up for the world title, and teasing that he could be a Triple Crown champion all at once.
This was when Kane was, he had first started talking, and then he got injured, and then he came back with the mouthless portion of the mask. You mean the mask that only covered his face and allowed him to talk.
And discovered Finger 11.
Pretty much, yes. And this was while Kane was doing sort of his comedic fan-friendly character.
The Kananites.
The Kananites, yes.
Oh, the worst name for fans I've ever heard.
I mean, at the time...
No, testicles would be number one.
I remember that first promo he cut back when he still had the full mask, and he did sort of like a Hogan
deal. With Hogan and Rock.
Yeah. And everybody loved it. Like, nobody thought Kane, this guy, Glenn Jacobs, would be able to cut a really funny babyface promo like that. And so when he came back, they kind of ran with it. But by this point, he had teamed with the Hurricane, and it was just, I think it ran its course already by even this point.
He had a girlfriend, Terry?
That was before. That was before all that. Like, that was DX.
Well, there was a reference. No.
Oh, Terry.
No,
Reynolds.
He's been with many women named T.
You're right.
And an I at the
You're
end.
You're right, yes.
This is Terry. They spin the wheel, and it lands on the TLC match, and Bischoff will decide their opponents later on. Booker's still being helped at ringside, and then Terry is with Jericho asking why he attacked Booker for no reason, and he calls her an ass clown and is sick of being overlooked. He is upset. He is upset that Goldust said that Fozzy sucks, and Booker called him a sucker, and it led to him losing the IC title to Kane the prior week. And he shows off the blood of Booker on his fist and says that he is unbalanced and he is not a sucker. So good promo here from Jericho.
Thus, the reason for the feud. He called him a sucker.
Don't call him a sucker. So Chris Jericho, we can add to the list here along with Kane. Current members of the roster.
Sure, yes. Oh, Booker.
Yeah, we mentioned Booker in Big Show.
Okay.
They spin the wheel again. This time it lands on a blindfold match for Triple H, and he says it's too dangerous. And Flair steps in, and Hunter promises that Kane's life will never be the same after tonight. And then Flair brings in Mandy and Sammy for a lesbian demonstration for Eric Bischoff for later in his hotel room. This was the second time we've seen a Sammy, the first woman, though, that we've seen. Remember Mark Henry's transvestite, Sammy.
Oh, yes.
We reviewed that Raw, didn't we?
Yes, we did, but I've since blocked it
with
out
Mark
of my...
With Mark Henry's mother on hand.
Yeah, I blocked that out of my memory somehow.
So, anyway, Flair hired two hookers, I guess, for Bischoff, is what we took away from this.
Escorts.
Yeah. All right. That's legit. Regal walks in and he complains over all of the crazy stipulations, and he wants his match tonight with Goldust to be a traditional wrestling match. But Bischoff says no. He spins the wheel and it lands on a Las Vegas showgirl match. And the stips are both men have to dress up as Las Vegas showgirls.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting. Great comedy. We had a vignette that Batista is coming to Raw. How do you think he'll get over on Raw? Think he'll click?
Yeah, perhaps. I think he'll probably
maybe
do...
if they put him in a group.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe yeah. If they put him in a movie, he'll probably do better.
Yes. And kills Ja Rule.
Ah.
That'd be great.
Yes.
So we got our blindfold match with Triple H against D'Lo Brown. And as blindfold matches went, this was a... about on par with every blindfold match you've ever seen. We had some comedy spots with Hunter pointing his finger at no one in the corner, and then he attacked the corner. Brown at one point grabs Earl Hebner. Hunter drops D'Lo and stomps him, and then Brown counters a pedigree with a back body drop. Jim Ross, in his infinite wisdom here, brings up a legendary blindfold match between Dick Murdoch and Killer Carl Cox.
Hmm.
Jim Ross going the extra mile here to put the blindfold match into context for historical wrestling fans. And Brown ends up hitting the sky-high powerbomb, but then Ric Flair distracts the referee. Hunter lifts his blindfold and pedigrees D'Lo and gets the win 2 minutes and 36 seconds.
Yeah, real... not much of a match, but I thought the blindfold spots, the comedic spots, were done very well.
We continue on, and Bischoff is with Christian, Bubba Ray, and Jeff Hardy in our, I guess, all members of... we've seen them all in TNA in the last few months, including Christian.
Oh, that's true, yes.
And
everybody in this scene.
Yeah. And they are discussing the TLC match, and Bischoff says that they are all suspended if they don't do the match, and they each get to pick a partner. And the reason, of course, Christian, Bubba, and Jeff Hardy, all one half of tag teams that made the TLC match such a big deal in the company. And then turns around, and Goldust is in a showgirl outfit. So all three guys have to go off and make friends.
Yeah, we should mention that. You know, at this time, the TLC was still a big deal. This was only the fourth match to happen, and really the first one without those teams being the focal point. Edge and Christian, Hardys, and the Dudleys.
Yeah, all the other the partners had all gone SmackDown at this point.
Yeah, Edge, they split up every one of these teams in
Edge,
that year.
Madden, brother, Reverend D-Von.
Reverend D-Von, yes. So a lot for these guys to live up to with the TLC name.
And I know a lot of these guys have done interviews talking about how they never feel TLC should be given away for free. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a match you just want to do for no reason. I mean, this is a match that guys get seriously injured in. And I think it was Jericho who said that it's just silly to ever do a match on a TLC match for free, mm-hmm. just for a one-night rating.
And which they did with TLC 3, which they did for this
And they would bring that up later on in the show, the forgotten TLC match. Yep. So then we get our Las Vegas Showgirl match, and Goldust comes out, and they tease William Regal not coming out, but then security drags him out in full-out drag. And William Regal, he owned this.
They literally and figuratively
dragged him out. Very nice, Way. Very nice. Goldust hit him with his ass bump and then set him up for Shattered Dreams, but Regal got out as Lance Storm runs down the aisle. And
his un-American teammate.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And distracts them on the floor. This allows Regal to use the brass knucks and pins Goldust in all of 51 seconds. And Jim Ross proceeds to call Regal the ugliest woman he has ever seen. And if all women looked like that, I would consider switching teams.
Jim Ross.
Wow. I would be gay if women looked like that. Jim Ross, what a night for this man.
Jim Ross had quite the night. He definitely had his work cut out for him with all these gimmicks. My favorite part of this was just watching Lance Storm walk up the ramp arm in arm with William Regal in full makeup and dress.
Yes.
Very funny.
Terry is with Christian and says that none of the Un-Americans will be his partner because he wants to win this match. So I think they were breaking up the Un-Americans at this point because we also saw Test later with no kind of affiliation with them anymore. So I guess they were breaking that one up. And he says that he won TLC matches all on his own the last three times. And then Chris Jericho...
I think he means two.
Yes.
He didn't win the third one.
I guess they look at that WrestleMania 2000 one, and I think it wasn't billed as TLC, but everyone considers it one. Hmm. Anyway, Chris Jericho walks in, reminding him of the forgotten TLC match from Anaheim in 2001 that he won, but I guess they couldn't say Chris Benoit here was his partner. This was foreshadowing. They never mentioned Benoit's name here as his partner.
Yeah.
Anyway, that TLC match, do you have any recollection of it, Wade?
I do.
Because that was the match that fucked up Benoit's neck, that forced him to need the surgery. They always said in storyline it was from that King of the Ring, but he actually...
Because he continued to wrestle for months
exactly.
after
he
that.
He did like a headbutt through a table in that TLC match, and that messed up his neck, and he kept working for another month after that, and then needed the surgery. But that match is... You're right, it's a... It is a forgotten TLC match that not too many people think of.
Well, they actually worked an injury angle during that match with Benoit, where they took Benoit out and
that's
then he
right,
came back.
That's right. Which was maybe even based on him legit getting a stinger or something.
Huh.
I don't know. Bischoff So they agree to team up, Christian and Jericho. The beginnings of Vitamin C.
Vitamin C, yes.
The worst name.
There have been worse.
That's true. There has been. Bischoff is with Trish and Stacy, and they are going to have a blank on a pole match. Pole match way.
I love pole matches.
And then he decides to make it double or nothing. So he spins, and he announces that there is going to be a paddle on a pole match, and it's going to be a bra and panties match.
Well, what exactly would be nothing here? What does that mean, double or nothing? In this
no
context?
Match. But that
how would you rule nothing
on a wheel that's clearly going to land on something?
Mm.
So we have a bra and panties match, and the winner gets to spank the other with a paddle.
Yes.
Lovely.
There was a clear quotient of TNA that they needed to fill. T ampersand A that they needed to fill on these shows.
Yes, clearly. It seemed that there was like this real... It was like every week they had different ideas for the women's division. Like this was a time when the women's division was really starting to gain its momentum, mm-hmm. With Trish in there and with Victoria being introduced. But at the same time, for nights like this, they were, well, we're doing a bra and panties match with you two women, and you're going to spank one another with a paddle.
Well, I feel like people like Trish would probably tell you that the Divas division was not just one or the other. It was them being sexy and, you know, showing their bodies, but as well impressing the guys with the matches as well, which is what
I think there's a happy medium you could do. But to me, it's and you're going to spank someone with a paddle.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything more demeaning?
Barking like a dog.
I thought of that too. You're right. So Trish leaves, and then as Stacy walks off, Bischoff spanks her in the ass.
Mm-hmm. And then Stacy pretends to like it, but gives a weird look off camera. So perhaps this was some type of commentary on this sexual harassment in the workforce.
In 10 years, has anyone made the progress of Stacy Keibler going from a paddle on a pole match to hosting dinners with George Clooney for Barack Obama and doing fundraisers?
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's just
hold
crazy.
On, but what does that say, though? Like, why is Stacy Keibler successful? Because she's dating this guy? Is that any better?
Well, that's a large part to do with it. She would not be having fundraisers with Barack Obama if it wasn't for George Clooney.
Yeah.
100%. Bubba walks into the locker room with Tommy Dreamer and Spike Dudley seated, and he picks Dreamer. And Spike says he wants to be Bubba's partner. And Bubba ends up changing his mind after Dreamer offers to give up his spot so Spike can work in the match. So we've got Bubba and Spike as our next team.
Mm.
The Dudleys, 2.0. Keibler, this random shot of Keibler walking in the back, and one of the assistants points out her shoelace is untied. So Stacy bends over, and the assistant drools, watching her ass. As these are segments that this team comes up with, and then they've got to pitch it. Stacy, this is what we have in store for you tonight. First off, Eric Bischoff is going to grab your ass. Then you're going to do a match involving a paddle hitting your ass. And just for fun, we also want to have you bend over for this assistant. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. What's the problem?
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, exactly. What's the problem here? That's why they're hired. That's, you know.
I'd feel awkward
they're not
pitching this.
Wait, hold on a second. These women are not hired for their, brains, John.
Great.
I'm sorry. Yeah, well, this is the TV. This is what sells.
Well, we go on to the best of my recollection, maybe the first ever bra and panties paddle on a pole match between women's champion Trish Stratus and Stacy Keibler. And Lawler plugs the new Divas magazine coming out tomorrow. And this was the first time Trish Stratus used her Little Kim theme.
Oh, was it the first time?
Time to Rock and Roll.
All right.
Yes.
Off of the new anthology.
Yes, yes. This was a few years before Kim would go to prison for perjury.
Right.
I finished my book on the Tupac and Biggie case.
Did you?
Yes. I learned so much about hip-hop.
Wow. Yep. Cool. That's all you need to know. Who went to jail?
I can't believe this book got published, to be honest. This cop, like, full out says who he believes killed Jam Master Jay, but the NYPD fucked up his case. And
wow.
It's amazing. I'm like, man, how has this guy not been sued? Or,
but I guess he's...
Freedom of speech.
I guess so.
Keebler attacks her from behind, rams Trish's face into the title belt, and Trish fights back, goes for the Stratus faction, but gets tossed into the corner, and her top is torn off. But then Stratus tears Stacy's shirt off. They do a back-and-forth roll-up spot with Trish finally taking off Keebler's shorts and gets the win at 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
I like how they actually work some wrestling holds into the stripping maneuvers.
We see almost like an
Oklahoma roll or some type of victory roll into the stripping.
Because, you know, if you just pull a woman's shirt off, there's going to be a segment of the audience that says, really? That's so lazy.
Listen, they
it's like adding work rate to softcore scenes.
Was Fit Finlay working with these women at this time?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, clearly these writers are like, Fit, I need these women to strip each other. And, you know, a guy like Fit Finlay and Trish, and I'm sure and Stacy as well, they're all like, how can we be creative with
this? Sit down and just, they're all like looking up into the sky and thinking, what is the best way to tear your shirt off for the audience? Well, I've got a few ideas here. How about we do the fish out of water spot where we go back and forth with the roll up,
yeah,
and then
back in Ireland,
pull your panties out.
Exactly, back in Ireland, I've always thought about great ways to rip my opponent's pants off. So you know, like a pretty technical bra and panties match.
Very
I would
technical,
say.
But bra and panties.
Yeah.
Match.
So I don't know. I don't have a problem with these.
Stacy attacks her after the match with a head kick and grabs the paddle, but Trish counters and spanks Stacy with the paddle. So Stacy's ass took a beating on this show.
Yes. Yes, it did.
Victoria comes down the aisle, identified by Jim Ross as that maniac. And they fight with Victoria stomping down on Trish. And Ross asks, what is her story? And Victoria super kicks Trish in the face, scoop slams her, and then hits a moonsault, and then tosses Trish into the steps. Quite the post-match beatdown here by Victoria. And setting up, these two would have their first match on the forthcoming pay-per-view at No Mercy.
Yeah.
So I believe this was the second appearance of Victoria on WWE television.
Aside from being a Godfather's host.
A hoe. Yeah, that's right. She was always a hoe in her debut. Test is in the ring in the next segment, and Al Snow comes out, and apparently Bischoff has hired Al Snow from SmackDown following the taping of Tough Enough 3.
Hmm.
So a big acquisition here for the Raw brand.
Yeah,
Al Snow.
A big pop for Al Snow as he came out.
Yes, we had an impromptu Las Vegas street fight here between these two after they spun the wheel with Test and Snow, and both dart for the plunder under the ring. Snow had these big dice that he used as weapons. He comes off the top with a sign, but gets hit by a stop sign by Test. There's a drop toe hold that sends Test into a trash can, and Snow takes a flip bump into the corner. Lots of shots to the head here with trash can lids, and Snow then counters a superplex and drops Test on a garbage can, hits a cross body for a two count, and then Snow uses the trash can lid after a Hurricane Rana is blocked by Test. Then Test gets seated in the corner, and Snow brings out a bowling ball, puts on a bowling shirt, and goes to bowl and put this bowling ball into his testicles.
Into Test's testicles.
Into Test's testicles. But Test gets up, ducks the ball. Snow actually, with his fingers in the ball, went to fucking swat Test in the head with a bowling ball.
It could have been worked.
I would not trust my reflexes to get out of the way.
It could have been a worked bowling ball.
A worked bowling ball.
You could totally work a bowling ball.
I don't know about that. Snow hits another lid shot to the head, then a second one, then a third one, and then he gets the ball, hits him in the head, and gets the win at 5 minutes and 40 seconds. So Al Snow, victorious here on his return to Raw, I guess.
Victorious, yes.
Great.
Really, the premise of the match was to hit each other with objects as hard as they can, and they did a good job of that.
Good
crowd.
For them.
Crowd certainly loved it. This crowd loved everything, though.
So we had seen so far D'Lo Brown, saw Al Snow. This was like a TNA agents night as well.
Yep. Eric Bischoff, who's involved backstage,
and then Hardy, Bubba.
Yeah.
A lot of guys.
Stevie Richards, who kinda is in TNA.
Yep.
But not really.
From here, Lawler says that his match is next, and he wants it to be an HLA match. How would that work? How would Lawler be in a hot lesbian action match?
He would have to, yeah, I don't know.
Would he go into a booth and, like, watch it? Or
perhaps.
So it's Jerry Lawler against Steven Richards, and they spin the wheel, and it lands on, it's legal in Nevada.
So what does that mean, Tone?
That means the Godfather comes out for a special cameo with the whores.
The hoes.
The hoes.
The hoe train.
So
the winner gets to fuck some prostitutes.
That was essentially the stipulation here. Winner gets to fuck whores. 2002 WWE. So the match begins. The crowd is all chanting for Lawler. He gets knocked over the top to the floor. And Lawler gets his foot up as Richard comes off the second turnbuckle. Crowd then starts chanting, free the hose, as Lawler makes a comeback with a drop kick. We have a match for the hose, as Jim Ross talks about Lawler's accomplishments as a former AWA champion, beating Kurt Hennig for the title. Richards gets his foot on the ropes after a pin attempt, and then Lawler blocks sunset flip and pins Richards at 225. And then the hoes swarm Jerry Lawler, where I swear to Christ, you've never seen a man more excited here. He was literally fondling these women. He was, like, grabbing their stomachs. He was trying to fall down to the mat with them and get on top. This was gross.
No, there's nothing raunchy about what he did in the ring. It was just, come on.
These women, I think, were like, all right, this is not what we signed up for.
What do you mean? They signed
up? Did you see the spot where he went to fall to the mat and put his arms out to grab them down with him, and one fell on top of him.
So, what was wrong with that? There's nothing sexual there. This was the...
I don't want to see Jerry Lawler fucking molesting these women here.
This is not molestation. This was acting. This was great acting.
Great.
But this, again, I can't really complain about any of this, because this crowd loved it. They loved it. They wanted to live vicariously through this man who is able to afford these prostitutes. Well, I guess he doesn't have to pay. They're free.
They're free hoes. Does that make them hoes?
Yeah. Because they're still getting paid by the Godfather.
They're comps. They're comped hoes.
Yeah. All right.
We get a great spot here on young Randall Orton, aspiring professional wrestler. And this was Orton as 100% babyface here.
I wouldn't say 100%. Even in these segments, you could tell they're teasing some type of subtle turn, making him a bit narcissistic and obnoxious.
Well, they showed us in this video package, they showed a close-up of a fan sign that read, Randy Orton. T-A-N.
Yeah.
With his name spelt wrong. I enjoyed that. They discuss his drop kick, and Bob Orton Jr. says, in 10 years, he'll be one of the best wrestlers ever.
What's your assessment 10 years later?
Oh, he's certainly one of the biggest stars. He's a very good performer.
He is.
Very good. He's definitely a project that turned out as a success for the company, I think.
Yeah.
Barring any more suspensions.
I wouldn't say one of the biggest stars ever.
No, but of this generation, he's big.
He is. Yeah.
Do you think, Wei, if we review another Raw a year from now, that he'll be part of the TNA list?
Because
one more strike and he's gone.
Perhaps. I would hope that he wouldn't be so stupid, though. I mean,
at least he owns his name, and he wouldn't have to go as Randy Orton.
Sure, but I mean, you get the opportunity to become one of the biggest stars in the industry, and you fuck it up in ways that even the smallest guy doesn't. When was the last guy to get fired over three strikes?
No one's been fired,
and this guy Randy Orton could be the first. How ridiculous!
Well, set the standard high. So Orton is then shown at the World. I thought I was a total babyface here, and just hamming it up with the locals.
Well, definitely at this time. See, you felt that way, but I even felt some heelish, obnoxious characteristics in him. He's like with a woman, and the woman doesn't even ask for an autograph. Orton's just like, hey, you want an autograph? Yeah.
Oh, did he do that? Yeah. I guess subtly they knew where they were.
But although he would come back here, and then he would injure his shoulder, and that's when we got the really good heel build with those RNN updates on his shoulder.
Yeah, those are really the first time you saw his personality come through. And that was really a turning point for him. And then, boom, you would fast forward to with Evolution kicking off. And he just really took off at that point. Terry is with Kane and says, I can certainly confirm he is the big red machine.
Gross.
Yeah.
Well, so, I thought it was... Kane.
Wait a second.
You have a big dick.
Hold on a second, though. You go back a few years ago, and
was not storyline continuity.
Exactly. The Tori X-Pac storyline, and Tori, as revealed to him,
it's impotent.
Wasn't it burned in the fire?
His penis was burnt, apparently.
If only we could do a sit-down with Kane, and we could ask him about this storyline gap.
There's been a lot of thought put into Kane's penises. Between this, between X-Pac, between See No Evil and Vince.
Oh, yeah! In See No Evil, he was supposed to have... What was it?
Three-foot penis.
So, man, the story of Kane's dick.
That deserves a book on its own. Journey into Darkness.
Too many titles all at once. He says he's happy right now. He's never been so happy. And he has a chance to win all of the titles at No Mercy. And then Jonathan Coachman walks in and tells him that Hunter and Flair have attacked the Hurricane. And he chases them down in the back. And they are broken up by Sergeant Slaughter and John Laurinaitis, making a brief appearance on camera.
Oh, I didn't notice.
And Kane yells, "You son of a bitch!" Kane feigning anger.
It was totally the wrong direction in hindsight for Kane. Have they tried to turn Kane babyface later? I suppose he always changes, but
he's always gone back and forth. I've never seen him as a top level guy, either a heel or a babyface. I've just never taken him when he's pushed as a top guy.
Right. Certainly not at the level of an Undertaker, and especially when there's an Undertaker around. It's just way too much of a character. You know? Way too gimmicky.
And not a guy who can really pull off a main event match. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I think the standards are lower today than they were 10 years ago for a main event in the WWE, but he was someone that just... I didn't care to see for a 20-minute match, which is ultimately what this had to lead up to.
But they were definitely trying with this.
This is probably the biggest push he had as a babyface was this time period.
Yeah, and I really don't. I just didn't feel like it was working for him. And certainly the announcement to come at the end of the show wouldn't help.
And that takes us to the main event, a TLC match with Kane fighting on his own because the Hurricane had been taken out. Defending the tag titles against Jeff Hardy and Rob Van Dam, Bubba and Spike Dudley, and Chris Jericho and Christian. And these guys went 25 minutes here on TV.
Did you get into the angle at the end of the previous segment? Where they took out the Hurricane?
Oh, yeah. It was just Hunter and Flair beating him down. Yeah. And he never returned.
Yeah.
So Kane comes out alone. And meanwhile, Jim Ross was... solo here. So I guess Jerry Lawler was, for continuity's sake, why would he come back to work once he's won the hose?
Yeah.
So Jim Ross called this whole match by himself, and I thought did a great job.
I did too. I thought it was surprising because Ross was actually looking for King. It seemed like he was expecting King to come back, yet he was by himself. And maybe
I thought he was just so great here, and it's like I watched this, and it's like, how... If I was watching this with a young kid and they asked me, man, whatever happened to Jim Ross? It's like you don't even have a good reason to explain why he is not still doing Raw.
NXT.
Yeah. This guy's just, he does their internet show. Mm. He's around. He would love to do Raw, but they still want to use him.
Although I do see their perspective. If you want to advance your next generation of announcers, that being Michael Cole, you have to make way. You have to get rid of the older guy.
I don't know. I just feel that it's...
He certainly could be used better, but I'm at least happy to see him get some type of role on NXT.
The match begins. Hardy scales the barricade and clotheslines Kane on the floor. There were so many spots in this match. Kane gets hit with a chair on the floor by Hardy, who then climbs a ladder and delivers a leg drop over the ladder onto Kane on top of a table. After the commercial, everyone is out with Spike climbing and gets taken down by Christian. Kane tips the ladder, and Christian, smartly here in this TLC match, crotched himself on the top rope rather than took his usual bump of clearing the top rope and taking the bump on the floor. RVD hits a Van Terminator to Kane as Hardy holds up the chair. Christian took this nasty toss off the top by Hardy and then landed badly on a ladder. Bubba hit a superplex to Hardy off the ladder. Then Jericho, he's climbing the ladder. Spike Dudley tips the ladder and Jericho goes forward and does this like somersault over the top rope and just narrowly misses his head smashing onto the steps. This was one of the most dangerous bumps I've ever seen in a TLC match. Jericho could have died here. This was just completely crazy. I can't imagine that was the planned spot. I'm sure he thought he'd hit the ropes and he ended up overshooting it and then flipped over. This was crazy.
Yeah. There have been a lot of crazy things.
It was nuts. I couldn't believe this spot. Spike then goes for the Dudley dog, previously the acid drop, and Christian blocks it in midair and puts him over the top rope and through a table on the floor. Ross says that you can't compare what these men are doing to anyone else in any walk of life. These men are doing things above and beyond anyone in life right now.
Okay.
Anyone. Astronauts. Physicists, no one. No one is doing the level of work these seven men are doing.
You certainly can't compare them because they're not the same thing at all.
We see a Bubba bomb to Christian off the ladder. Ross described this Bubba bomb off the ladder as being 15 feet in the air, as Jim Ross got a little ahead of himself here. Then we saw a five-star frog splash to Christian. Hardy misses a swanton to Bubba. And then Hardy takes this huge back body drop to the floor through a table. And Jericho stops RVD on the ladder with a chair, applies the walls on the ladder, which is a spot he did a lot with Benoit. And then that takes out RVD. Kane appears and chokeslams Jericho off the ladder. Both men are laying. Kane sits up, climbs the ladder, and he grabs the titles. As I mentioned, this one went over 25 minutes on TV. Went through about two commercial breaks, and this was just crazy, this match.
It was insane, absolutely.
The guys worked really hard.
Although I would still categorize this amongst the four to be the worst one, and that's not saying, you know, that sounds bad to say because it was a fantastic match, but the standard was set so high by the first three that I felt like it would be hard to live up to. Not as good as the other. In my opinion, TLC's 2 was still the best one, and it is still the best one. But for a free TV match, this was fantastic.
Yeah, and this was a match. It was kind of a... I looked back here at the ratings, and that week they ended up doing a 3.8. It was 0.2 higher than the prior week. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you can necessarily even call this kind of hot-shotting idea a giant success. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason guys, I think, don't enjoy doing... First of all, just the physical toll here. I mean, Bubba suffered a concussion in this match. I think a bunch of guys were had a lot of bumps and bruises after this match. But here we are. It's like... You remember pay-per-view matches. You don't remember television matches that well. Even though way more people saw them, they don't stick out like pay-per-view matches. And I think a lot of people, until we were reviewing this, probably had no recollection of this, unless it was very vague.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Raw. It was
Oh, no, that wasn't
Raw. Oh, fuck. How the fuck did I almost forget
this? This was the main event.
The main event began with 90 seconds to go as Triple H and Ric Flair came out and said that sometimes people are not allowed to be that happy, Kane, after you said this is the happiest you've ever been. And Hunter asks, how happy is Katie Vick? And Kane has a puzzled look on his face, as did 14,000 people in this arena and sitting at home. And Hunter says, 10 years ago, you killed her. And Kane, you're a murderer. And... the world laughed in uproarious hilarity as wrestling got stupid.
I mean...
one of the stupidest storylines in history.
This was a good episode of Raw, I felt. And initially, the announcement of this Katie Vick deal, I think it just confused all of us. At the same time, I don't think any of our hopes were very high for how this would turn out. Murder angle in a pro wrestling storyline, it already takes you out of it. I mean, fuck. You should be going to the comps, first of all, if this was a... why even talk about it? Katie Vick, your initial thoughts when this was introduced.
I thought it was ridiculous. I was like, I don't want to see a story about a supposed murderer. But that being said, I think my initial reaction was, all right, they're going to do something here where it's Hunter just trying to swerve us and Kane is not an actual murderer. I mean, how bad could this get? And WWE had an answer. They're like, oh, yeah? Yeah, we'll call your bluff. Wait till we show you what we've got in store here.
They somehow had this... They had a match to build to between Kane and Triple H, and they needed an idea on how to build to that match. And they thought, murder? What else can we throw in there? Necrophilia. And that writes itself, doesn't it?
Well, we're going to get into the feedback, but let's first talk about what we're going to review next week. Because after this episode, Way... There was only one direction I think we could go.
I didn't know that this would be the episode that would introduce the Katie Vick storyline until I watched it, until you mentioned it. And so heading into the 1,000th episode of Raw, what more momentous episode is there than the Katie Vick episode featuring the infamous skit with Hunter inside a funeral parlor?
Inside something else.
Yes, and so that is the episode we will be reviewing next week.
Episode 493 from October the 14th of 2002.
There we go.
The Katie Vick episode. I think we have to review this episode.
I don't know how we missed it until now,
well,
to be honest.
Way, I felt that for something so momentous, we have to have a guest on the show.
And who would that be?
I could not track down Katie Vick because, of course, she is dead. So I found the next best thing, and that was two of the creative members... one of which was on the Raw staff at the time, and another one who was on the SmackDown team, and were heavily involved with this angle. I'm sure you followed him on Twitter. We're going to be joined by Seth Mates and Chris Goff at the same time, Way.
Wonderful.
Next week, both members of the WWE creative staff at the time, both of which could not pass up on the opportunity to chat about Katie Vick. And Chris Goff specifically was in the room when this idea was hatched. So he is going to tell us all about that, as well as Seth, who did work on... he was primarily on the SmackDown staff at the time, but also was involved with Raw at the time. So we can chat a lot about Katie Vick and that whole time period with Raw and SmackDown.
I really cannot wait. We are going to devote an entire 1.5 hours
to Katie Vick.
To the legend of Katie Vick.
Well, it is. Wait, it's like that is a name synonymous with like wrestling shit.
Totally. And if any of you have any questions that you
maybe we should take
there,
questions for Chris and Seth.
The world has so many questions about this mysterious, fictitious dead body.
Okay, so that's going to be a lot of fun next week. We're going to review Raw and then two creative members from 2002 joining us. I'm very much looking forward to this.
I am too.
So we'll put the thread up early, actually, this week for the Raw so you can post questions as well, because that could be a lot of fun. So now we move over to your feedback for this week. Let's start off with Dave Crawford, who writes, I found the show and watched it back, and as a standalone show, it was pretty good, although it really did very little to build to a pay-per-view or get me interested in upcoming matches or anything like that. TLC main event was the obvious highlight. It didn't have quite the level of craziness the previous ones did, although not that far off, but to get this on free TV is pretty great. Jim Ross was awesome during this match, but this is Jim Ross, so of course he was awesome when he was given something great to work with. Happy Kane was very different from what we're used to and just seems weird. Of course, this was the setup for some classic wrestle crap, as the week after we got the Claire Lynch-esque emotional revelation from Kane, and then the week after that was the infamous necrophilia skit. But those came after and can't be held against this particular show.
Oh, was it 2 weeks after that we got
there? I don't think it was, because...
We'll look that up.
Yeah, we better look that up. Anyway... But those came after and can't be held against this particular show. Besides that, we had the standard Ross staples of the time with the TNA match, the Plunder match, the second TNA match, William Regal being humiliated, and a Triple H victory, although none of this really stands out as memorable. It was the paint-by-numbers Raw booking of 2002, just with some wacky stips added. The cage match was pretty bland, but at least it seemed to be part of a push for Booker T, so pretty much based on just on that main event and conveniently forgetting where the post-match deal led, I give the show an 8.5 out of 10. My choice for a memorable episode of Raw to review in the next couple of weeks is the January 19th, 98 edition featuring Austin and Mike Tyson and their pull-apart.
Andrew McDonald says, The concept of Raw Roulette was interesting at the time. If I remember correctly, it had a blindfold match between Triple H and D'Lo. I loved the Roberts-Martel blindfold match, so I was excited to see this one. It was a short match, but a concept that has a lot of potential. The most memorable part of the show was the birth of the infamous Katie Vick angle, where professional wrestling as a whole may have just jumped the shark. There were hand births and bad world champions, but this angle... But this took it to a different level, as it was a main event angle involving having sex with dead girlfriends. Maybe this is why Kane told AJ he doesn't do relationships. It's sad, as this match won the Greatest Match in Raw History award at the 10th anniversary show a few months later. Some people may agree or disagree with that, but in the end, it was completely overshadowed by Triple H dropping the Katie Vick bombshell. Or I guess it may have been a turd that he dropped instead. They went from a simple show that made light of a rapist in jail to having a simulated necrophilia rape scene close to 500 episodes later. It all came full circle. As for a Raw episode to review, if you can find it, as it may be tough, the episode on November 20th, 1995, where they did the Shawn Michaels collapse. As a kid, I'd marked out over it and was concerned for the health and well-being of my favorite wrestler.
We continue onwards here with...
Before we get going, we should... I did some research in the time that I... while at the same time reading
while
my feedback.
While you were reading, multitasker way. And discovered something.
And our listener was right. It is, in fact, not the episode afterwards, but two episodes afterwards. So next week, just to clarify, we are reviewing the 495th episode. Or wait,
494.
Whatever. October 21st, 2002. Remember that infamous date. That is the date of the Katie Vick funeral parlor angle.
And yes, folks, that means that they shot this big angle the night after their pay-per-view match.
That
makes this angle completely stupid.
Nothing makes... you got to build to the rematch somehow, John.
I guess. Right? I guess. I'm still waiting for that. Jay Hunter writes, very enjoyable slice of WWE from a decade ago. Nice to see Linda McMahon's campaign skeletons. Opening match blade job, women stripping and spanking each other, being degraded and sexually harassed, but they obviously love it. Men fighting over prostitutes. WWE ticked all the boxes. It sounded like JR hated the latter so much that he had to drop numerous AWA references. Even though Jake Roberts ruined blindfold matches at WrestleMania 7, Triple H does really good blindfold wrestler acting. That TLC match was mental. So many spots, and this was a throwaway Raw. Great to see a youthful and still really over RVD. To top it all off, the promise of the infamous Katie Vick angle. Car crash booking, tons of impromptu gimmick matches. It's no wonder WWE fans got burned out. That said, it was a thoroughly entertaining retro episode. A standout Raw for me was the go-home Raw for WrestleMania 13. Okay, and that's his choice for a future Raw review.
From Corey Ferreira, the first usage of the Raw Roulette gimmick. I found this show and checked it out. This was during the weird time frame where WWE were still trying to relive the Attitude Era and wouldn't let it go, and also when Raw was inferior to SmackDown. I found it weird seeing D'Lo Brown versus Triple H in 2002. This screams 1998 mid-card. Overall, it was a fun show. The in-ring work wasn't that great. If the Raw reviews are going to continue, how about the infamous July 7th, 1999 show with the Higher Power reveal and the classic line, "It's me, Austin."
Well, there. Some great selections, folks. And that's going to wrap up our feedback to October the 7th of 2002. So thanks to those of you that left your feedback and for tuning in. As we mentioned, next week, it's October the 21st, 2002, the review of Raw. We are going to have Seth Mates and Chris Goff on the show, former creative members with the WWE, discussing the Katie Vick angle and a number of events surrounding that 2002 time period. So once again, we'll be posting that thread up on the message board all week long so you can leave questions for Chris and Seth. So it's going to be a very, very fun show next week. And I just want to quickly mention that coming up later this week, we got a lot of stuff up on the website, including the Law and Review of Raw from the past couple of days. Review and Impact is going to be up on Friday with Wei Ting and Nate Milton once again going the full hour.
A three-shot of Nate Milton these
He is
past
really working
weeks.
Himself into that main event. And we might have even bigger Nate Milton news for later this summer. That's a long-term build right there. So yeah. A little tease right there. So coming up Friday as well, the debut of the MMA Report with me. And it's going to feature Kung Lee, Ed Suarez, who is Anderson Silva's manager, and Ariel Helwani from MMAfighting.com and Fuel TV, number of different media outlets, chatting UFC 148 that's coming up Saturday night. You've got a pick, Sylvan Sonnen?
I got to
go.
Will
you be watching?
Of course I will be watching. I mean, I watch everyone, pretty much every notable UFC, and this is perhaps a card that I've not looked more forward to than
There's a lot of buzz for this one.
Yeah. I mean, Anderson's my favorite fighter, so I watched the first one with you, John. I remember how...
We watched that at Hoops.
How upset you were when Chael lost.
That was such a fun fight, man.
But I was ecstatic. I mean, I thought Anderson was going
to
lose.
Oh, I want Chael.
And here the guy pulled it out in the fifth round, and I was just so happy, so...
Do you remember that night where we were watching at the bar, and then there was a moment during the main event where I turned around and... All these people had piled up to the windows to watch this fight. It was one of the coolest live experiences of watching a fight where this whole bar was into this every second of this fight and everyone on the street was trying to watch it through the windows.
And I have a feeling this will be no different this Saturday. I mean, you know, it could be unless it's a one-round type of finish. But I think Chael's going to put up a really good fight. And it's going to attract that same type of atmosphere that I feel we saw that first time, if not bigger.
And just one other note regarding the MMA report. It is going to be online at tsn.ca/radio, as well as the tsn.ca iTunes feed. So if you do not subscribe, it's the tsn.ca feed. I believe there's going to be a specific XML feed for the MMA report. I'm still... figuring all this out myself. So I will keep you all updated. Regardless, I will make sure that this is an easy show to find if you miss it live Friday night at midnight Eastern on TSN Radio.
And then Saturday night after UFC.
Oh, Jesus Christ, that's right. Saturday night we're doing a post-show. Myself and Jason Agnew recapping UFC 148 along with Todd Martin from WrestlingObserver.com and SureDog.com. So,
hardest working man in radio, John Pollock.
It's too much. It's too much. Sunday night, we've got the law, but that's just years away from now. So I'm going to stop plugging. There's way too much stuff. I want you to all follow at Way0937. Tell him what a great job he's doing and compliment him on this choice of music he decided to go out with for this edition of Review Away. What are we listening to right now, Way? What is this?
Well, this was Raw Roulette and taking place in Las Vegas. And, you know, let's leave Las Vegas and let's go out with some... Leaving Las Vegas by Sheryl Crow.
Beautiful.